Welcome to Beyond Bitcoin, a podcast about all things digital assets, the global communities they are creating, the generations that are using and investing in them, and the challenges faced by the nations that are seeking to regulate them. The content of this program is not to be taken as investment advice. The opinions expressed in the program by the host and the guests are their personal opinions only. Remember, feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and my co-host is Nitin Gower, Managing Director of State Street Digital Assets. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome along to another episode of Beyond Bitcoin. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and of course, I'm always here with my friend and colleague, Nitin Gower, the CTO of Portal Asset Management. Hey, Nitin.
Hey, Derek. Busy week. Amazing week. Bitcoin hits all-time highs, so this is going to be a super fantastic session, which I'm looking forward to talking to Greg, which he'll come on in a few seconds, but glad to be here, as always.
Terrific. Hey, special introduction today, and that is Greg Galton has not just joined our podcast, but he's joined Portal Asset Management as the analyst advising us particularly on the aspects of investing in the Radiance Multi-Strategy Fund. Now, Greg is extraordinary because Greg is a degen, and of course we mean that in the nicest possible way, and that means he's a crypto degen. But there's very few crypto degens out there that have got 20 years experience as a senior analyst for some of the largest investment houses in Australia, and then 5 years experience in being an analyst in the area of digital assets. That is very unusual for a degen. So hello, Greg, and welcome along to both the show and, of course, also to Portal Asset Management.
Oh, thanks, Derek. That's an amazing introduction. Really appreciate it. And given that I am a degen, it's GMGM to the two of you. Indeed.
Yeah. I just learned this, Derek, as Greg was educating us, that degens only look for a good morning at the start of a new day, apparently. So Greg embodies that. And if I can say that Greg is a newly born again degen, because he's already done the degen work in Tradify. Now he's rediscovering that whole religion back in crypto. So welcome, Greg.
Thanks, Nitin. Yeah. And yeah, it's that sort of 20 plus years experience in sort of analyzing companies and speaking with CEOs and looking at business models. You know, that does apply with crypto. But then there's a whole raft of other things you need to look at. You know, tokenomics, you need to understand hype, you need to understand social metrics. You know, is this trending on X, you know, formerly Twitter? What are the other factors that you're looking at as well? So it brings a whole new level of interest for me. And it's something I'm really incredibly passionate about. And just that opportunity that crypto, you know, cryptocurrencies, digital assets, you know, the opportunities that they bring to people in everyday life. It's quite amazing, really, the opportunities.
You know, Nitin, you and I have often talked about the fact that the knowledge to do market neutral, high frequency trading, arbitrage in this space is broadly directly transferable from traditional markets. You know, it's the same thing whether you're trading foreign exchange or whether you're trading exchanges between crypto. And however, we've also said that the read across for equity analysts is not immediate. And if you are well and truly entrenched in traditional equity analysis, then you'll really struggle with the analysis of this space because the factors are different. That's what you've found, Greg?
Yes, it is actually, Derek. I'm still staying in contact with a number of friends over on the East Coast that are fund managers and senior analysts. None of them get crypto. They understand the concept of the blockchain, and that's about as deep as they really want to go. It's really intimidating to them, I think. It's a whole new genre, potentially a whole new asset class. And they don't want to invest the time. They also, I guess, see it as a threat to their traditional business. You know, that's something that we can talk about in terms of tokenization of securities and all of those different factors that will inevitably come and will change the traditional finance industry in ways that we can't imagine at the moment. So, yeah, I think they're sort of burying their heads in the sand a little bit, but at some point in time, they'll have to start lifting up, you know, reading about Bitcoin understanding it, and then seeing the flow-on effects to across the whole ecosystem. So it's going to take time, but it's good. I feel confident that we're still early, because I am having those conversations with those friends, and they're still not interested in it yet. They are starting to ring me now with Bitcoin back up at all time highs.
Yeah, you certainly have new friends. You have new friends this week. We all have new friends this week.
Yeah, I'm asking whether they should be investing at these levels, and I'm like, no, you should have been investing at 15,000.
Yeah.
But of course, no one wanted to touch it back then. So, it's still a lot of FOMO involved in cryptocurrency, I think.
So one thing, Greg. Yourself sort of taught, we all are, because the industry doesn't have any formal sort of landscape around this, and you were an equity analyst. You looked into this from the earnings and the numbers that describes the future growth potential of a corporation. How do you evaluate a stock? What are the global macro events that impact stocks? There's like a defined discipline, and there's specialization that people have, which has been quite established, I would say, over the last 30 plus years. A lot of math and a lot of computational models have made it much more, trying to close the gap between the information asymmetry that existed between the balance sheets and now, what the trading floors reflected. How do you view, as an analyst, how do you view crypto? Because crypto technically is supposed to be efficient, but is by far efficient. There is a lot of information asymmetry, which is not the intention, because the information is available. How do you view that? What is your sort of rubric that you applied? And many equity analysts who've come from traditional finance have taken the same old model of candlesticks analysis and stochastic analysis and looking at this and saying, okay, this is the price movement. But there's a lot more to it, as we all know. So shed some light on that thinking.
Yeah, thanks. To me, it's really... it's not much different than looking at an emerging tech stock, really. It's working out what the total addressable market could be. And in crypto, that's potentially very large. And then what potentially market share they could take from that. Now, the problem with crypto, and a lot of projects are open source, it's very easy to copy someone very quickly. So you could come up with an advantage and you're copied within 2 or 3 weeks, and someone's having a very similar product to you and taking share. So it's a very competitive market. You've got to be very aware of that. I think one thing that I'm noticing or have seen is that some founders and some devs will bring projects to life that aren't technically bulletproof, that are probably underdone, but they want to get to market quickly. And I think that's sometimes that can still make that a pretty damn good investment, because they're first in, they've got the brand name, they get the market share, unless someone comes in with a vampire attack, for example, like SushiSwap did on Uniswap all those years ago to take away their TVL. Once you've got that TVL locked in, as long as you don't get hacked. And that's where, being able to understand the audits, the audits of the smart contracts is pretty important as an analyst as well. You can never really predict whether they're hack-proof or not, but certainly gives you a degree of confidence. And it's another thing to be looking at that you don't look at in traditional finance. If they can keep that TVL, then they should be able to continue to grow and sort of work towards that market share that you can see it being achieved. And plus quite a few pivots as well. We've seen a number of protocols over the last 2 years that have come out with doing one thing and pivoted to another. And sometimes you've got to give them credit for not being too stubborn. Other times you think, well, maybe they're just sort of following on the hype train. So you've got to take all of those different factors. You've got to deal with sometimes founders that are undoxed. Sometimes they're doxed. So trying to establish the track record of an undoxed founder is tricky. I want to have some confidence that this guy's or this person or this team has generated value in the past for shareholders or for token holders, whatever it may be, if they've come out of Web 2. But yeah, there's so many different factors. And then you add the technical analysis on top of that. Technical does work quite well for crypto, because momentum is such a strong component of returns that, technical analysis can be quite good if a token is trending. And you add all those factors together, you try and get an idea of what valuations are, but let's face it, in a bull market run, you know, trying to have a target price is irrelevant. You know, we know that tokens can just blow through those target prices so easily.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be leaving thing, you know, money on the, you know, money on the table. So that's
And for audience, we used a few terms. We used TVL, and it's a common term, of course, in crypto. This total value locked, which is a metric that's been utilized in protocols that are involved in providing this digital intermediary services, and that's a measure. And doxed is another interesting term that I don't think many audiences would know for, is sort of the element of uncovering some of the secret documentation of cyberbullying that actually happens with many founders in this bold world of social media that we live in. So just for the audience sort of reference, those are the two words. But no, I do agree with you, Greg, that it's a different lens that we measure the industry with. There are new metrics that are evolving. And as at Portal, this is, again, your work, my work, Derek's work. This is all our collective team's work. We look at just beyond fundamentals. We look at the fact that, yes, protocol has X transaction volumes and has Y potential because of TVL, which means the utilization is there for the protocol. But we also look at things like code bases. We look into things element of the fact that what is the potentiality of the project? What are the other risk metrics that are going into it? So I think you're spot on that it's double the effort, in my opinion, Greg, only because things are still forming and new metrics are popping up every day as we see it. So great perspective. Derek?
So firstly, congratulations, Nitin. I think this is the first time in 2 and a bit years that you've actually provided explanation to acronyms that have provided someone else. Normally it's me providing the explanations about your acronyms, right? So I really appreciate that. Look, we could talk about this for a while, and we may have another episode where we just simply talk about the how to analyze various tokens and how different the analysis is depending on whether you're looking at a layer one protocol or whether you're looking at a gaming dApp. They're very different sections of variables to determine whether that's interesting. But for now, let's have a chat about the macro of what's happening. And for the listening audience, because we're delving so much into investment, this is not investment advice, never is. We're always throwing ideas around and sharing our thoughts for educational purposes. In this particular case, we're happy to talk a little bit about our investment strategy in the Portal Radiance Fund, but let's talk about BTC and the current ETF versus demand versus the mining returns. You know, we're seeing the interesting play out of the Bitcoin halving cycle, and everybody's putting it up there as if it was laid down by some religious reason and it has to operate exactly the same way every 4 years. Can you talk us through what that halving cycle is? What analysts are saying should happen over the next few months, but what the variables are since the last halving cycle some nearly 4 years ago, Greg?
Sorry, sure. Thanks, Derek. Yeah, so I guess what you need to understand is the Bitcoin halving cycle has been built into the Bitcoin code. It was done originally by Satoshi Nakamoto. So the original rewards for the first 210,000 blocks was 50 Bitcoin per block generated. And then those every 4 years or every 210,000 blocks, those rewards are halved. We are coming up, as you said, on the fourth halving. I think that should be on track for around about April 19. So in about 45 odd days from today, in terms of the date of recording. And what has happened is there's been some quite significant price action in and around those halvings. What a few analysts are talking about at the moment is the pre-halving rally. So typically around about 65 days before the halving, you tend to get speculators in expecting the Bitcoin price to rally on the back of the halving. This is because those halving and returns make it less economically attractive for the Bitcoin miners. So the returns, for example, will go from 6.25 Bitcoin per block to 3.125 Bitcoin per block. Now, what that means is some of the uneconomic miners will drop out of the system, will unplug their ASIC miners. That'll see a reduction in difficulty. But at some point in time, you will start to see things pick back up again. And these miners, for them to be economic, will want to see a tick up in the Bitcoin price. because the halving, that you know they're getting half the rewards for the block. So you tend to see speculation about 65 days before. It's called the pre-halving rally. Now, the interesting thing with all of these, Derek, is, you know, history doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes. We're certainly seeing that play out at the moment. We have seen a significant rally in Bitcoin about 65 days out from the halving. So tick, that certainly has been history repeating. But this time around, it's actually run a lot harder than it has done in previous cycle. And within, well, it's actually almost touched all-time high. We haven't seen that in the past with halving cycles, Bitcoin touching its all-time high pre the halving. It's always happened months afterwards. So that's different. And I think one of the factors there is the amount of demand for Bitcoin coming from the US spot Bitcoin ETFs. Last week, I think that we saw 10 times the amount of demand for Bitcoin on per day basis than there were Bitcoin mined per day. There was stories on Twitter about over-the-counter desk, OTC desks, running out of Bitcoin. I've seen comments from some people with some of those on-ramp apps where they buy Bitcoin with their credit card that they don't have any Bitcoin left on the platform. So it's getting quite interesting that, you know, that the likes of BlackRock are probably having to come into the public market, the public secondary market for Bitcoin to be buying it, to satiate their demand for Bitcoin, which is coming obviously from investors in the US that can now invest in Bitcoin using their standard equity brokerage accounts. So a lot of different factors at play. I'll probably give you a bit of a break there and let you ask another question. I think you're probably dying to ask another question there.
I'm actually dying for you to keep going, because what we so often look at here with Bitcoin is that, I mean, we run a program called Beyond Bitcoin, but it's not because we're not interested in Bitcoin. It's because we're fascinated that Bitcoin plays a major role, but at the same time, the rest of the market is growing and evolving. And really, if you look at it, Bitcoin is digital gold in an enormous economy. Well, Bitcoin in its major economy, by the way, is worth about $13 trillion. And we've discussed a few times that the total assets that are investable assets around the world are somewhere between $450 and $500 trillion. Giving gold a perspective of where the total asset values are in this real world. But as this economy is growing, Bitcoin, in fact, is playing a way outweighed size of it. And we have no issue with that. It's a great thing because it's providing focus, because it's bringing on ramps to traditional institutional, sovereign and corporate investors into the space. But I'm also interested in how you see this going to play out and how it's going to play out through the Ethereums, the layer ones, the layer twos that are happening. And Nitin, in due course, I'd like to hear what your view is of what this overall ecosystem should be doing with, well, what role Bitcoin should be playing in this overall ecosystem rather than its kind of outsized speculative role that it's playing now. Hmm. Yeah, so sorry, a lot of questions there, but over to you, Greg, and maybe the first part of it.
I'll see if I can remember all of that, Derek. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, reading a few comments on crypto Twitter over the last couple of days, so many people sort of have always viewed Bitcoin as the boomer chain, you know, and really sort of came into crypto with the top shot NFTs, moved into ETH NFTs, and really now they're only just discovering that, you know, Bitcoin has its own NFT ecosystem as well, which has only really been up and running for about 12 months. So there's a lot of interest from degens now in Bitcoin, which is unprecedented. But like you say, it's also moving from a store of value to a financial asset in its own right. One thing I think that we will see as we see more institutional adoption of cryptocurrencies, and Bitcoin is leading the race here. We'll talk about ETH and the potential for ETH ETFs shortly. But I think, you know, Bitcoin's really driving that institutional adoption towards cryptocurrency assets, and how broad that will be into the future, we can only guess, but we certainly think it will be. But it's becoming, as I said, a potentially an entire asset class by itself. So one thing that I was looking at and what I expect to see is once we see a more mature options market or on the equities exchanges for the Bitcoin ETFs, mm-hmm. you'll start to see some of these investment banks are offering structured products for their high net worth clients. So what this will be, this will be a basically offering a client, a high net worth client of the investment bank, for example, a 10% per annum fixed yield. It'll be based on Bitcoin. It'll have no exposure to the Bitcoin price in terms of upside or downside, but it'll use quite complicated option structures to take that 10% out from the volatility that the Bitcoin price gives you and turn that into income within a structured product for a high net worth individual. So I think Bitcoin has potential to move outside of that digital asset environment and into traditional finance by becoming part of a structured product because of the volatility that it has and the strong returns, the strong capital growth that it's always historically had as well. But you can capture all that in options and turn that into an income product. Well, that's something I don't think the market's really talking about at all. ETFs, I think this is the next wave of institutional adoption. That's then going to start spark speculation about other layer one blockchains that will come through. You know, Solana's been touted as potentially the next cab off the rank for an ETF. So that's not financial advice, but that's just speculation at the moment. But one thing that I am sort of looking at for 2024, I think is going to be an interesting narrative, is scaling of blockchains. We've seen in the past Ethereum's been heavily congested. We've seen gas fees at very, very high levels. We're now starting to see that in Bitcoin. We're starting to see Bitcoin blocks being congested and gas fees being very, very high. So I think 2024 will be the year of scaling. That'll be potentially the year of layer twos. And I think that's going to be very interesting in terms of how that plays out on the Ethereum ecosystem. Certainly the EIP 4844 is going to be a bit of a game changer for L2s. You'll see a dramatic reduction in fees, in gas fees for layer twos on Ethereum. And I think that'll see them take the market share of TVL within the Ethereum ecosystem. And I think you'll actually see them potentially exceed Ethereum's total value locked in the next 12 months because of that. There'll be, you know, there's much more opportunity for arbitrage when gas fees are low, for switching products, for people to be incentivized to bring their funds onto these L2s because they know the gas fees are so low that if they get it wrong, they can quite quickly change. Versus with ETH, once you make a decision, you're kind of stuck because of those gas fees can be quite high for retail investors to be getting in and out of. So I think the battle of the L2s is going to be interesting. We certainly think Arbitrum, which is one of our key picks in the fund, is very well positioned. We think there'll probably be two or three major L2s by the end of the year. We'll see some consolidation. And as I said, we certainly think that they are well positioned for that.
So one thing on a few things, like to what Derek mentioned, right? On analysis, when we compare Bitcoin to liquid gold, or digital gold rather, Bitcoin now has almost, Derek, reached the market cap of silver. So it's that bit behind market cap of silver. Yeah. So it's already reached that. And second thing is, if you look at the overall, you know, it's reaching the November 2021 high, which is almost $3 trillion. Right? The market cap today is $2.63 trillion. So I think there's a little bit of maturity curve. And I agree with Greg's analysis that there's a demand pressure, both in terms of the $10 billion, which is what the IBTC is all about, which is the BlackRock's sort of ETF, which I don't know if it's too soon to name the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF as a segment winner, but it certainly has the lion's share, followed by, of course, you know, Fidelity and Bitwise. So there's a massive demand pressure, and the demand of Bitcoin has been much higher or far exceeded the daily production of Bitcoin. So there's like a demand supply challenge from that perspective. The greed index is all time high. But there's one narrative, Derek, which I spent some time writing about it last week, was what Bitcoin in its advent brought about this whole notion of be your own bank, which is the post-2008 financial crisis. The world was on fire. And we begin to look into the soundness of the monetary policy and fiscal policy that's managed by the central banks. Bitcoin is born in that era. And the narrative was always to ensure that the money should be of the masses, any challenge in the US being global reserve has infections onto the entire world economy because of the global commodities trade that happens in US dollar. So if any inflationary pressure in US dollar sort of begins to have a ripple impact on the world, there's all these conversations that we're having, and they are still relevant today. And the shift now, which is, I think, what Greg is mentioning, the evolution of ecosystem Ethereum and collectively as an industry of layer two, is focusing on not just being your own bank, but providing much more sophisticated financial services, which require an army of people who have specialized knowledge of this micro market infrastructures of specific asset classes. So right now, the terms like TVL or automated market makers or decentralized exchanges, these are constructs that are meant to solve the issue of being ability to not only move the money faster, better, cheaper, but also manage it better in making the money work for you. It's a little clunky today. It has been clunky, but I think a lot of improvements, as Greg also mentioned, alluded to the Denken upgrade, the 4844, the 4337 account abstraction, and coming from ETH Denver, enormous amount of focus on usability, like enormous, in making the wallets easier, which I think is the only impediment now, in my you know, informed opinion, Derek, is that I think there's a certain level of maturity the industry has gone through. Now we need more than the 100 million people, which is beyond Greg, please pardon my use of the term, you know, degens. We need just the common normies be able to understand and engage in the space and not just go 100%. After. So I would say that I'll pause there, Derek, but that's sort of the worldview that I hold in addition to what Greg mentioned.
Yeah. Look, that's superb. And totally agree. I mean, as we get through this, hopefully this price boom, remember we've always said, you know, price is what you pay, value is what you get. So right through the 2022 price drop, we actually saw the industry continuing to develop, continuing to grow, to continuing to provide solutions, continuing to overcome their challenges relating to their infrastructure. Now we're seeing the price go, which is wonderful for us investors and fund managers, but in some ways it's a distraction to the industry itself. What the industry is trying to work out now is once it's laid its infrastructure down, how does it make it very easy to use for what Nitin refers to as normies, as the normal people. So that's terribly important. We could do a whole show on that. But I tell you what, let's just go back to the Radiance strategy. And just mention that, you know, Radiance's strategy is what's regularly referred to as a barbell strategy. Part of it is in investment tokens that larger of capitalization have a very solid thesis in regards to the sector they're in, and in our view, and that is the view of Nitin and the view of Greg, are the best in class for the tokens. And around a third of the fund are in those earlier stage tokens, the ones that require that level of research that Greg was just outlining there in regards to the doxed teams and entrepreneurs and developers, etc., and you know, the Metcalfe's law relating to how quickly they're growing and scalability. One of them, as it turned out, we have an investment in is Injective. And just last week we spoke to the COO of Injective and found their product to be very and their solution to be very compelling. Greg, would you like to talk about a couple of these tokens that you've researched fairly deeply, what you've done, why we've determined that we want to deploy to them? And by the way, that's the Portal Radiance Fund is deploying to them. We're not giving financial advice that suggests you should deploy to them. But I'm really keen to hear your sort of workings towards getting those onto the portfolio.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. I think part of, obviously, the thesis around Injective is our thesis on the narrative for DeFi. Nitin's right. It is clunky. It has been subject to hacks in the past. Same with bridging. But what we're starting to see now, I think, is a demand for a more sophisticated form of DeFi from users. I think we'll certainly see institutions moving into DeFi. We'll see some start to use KYC, for example, so that institutions can participate there within a regulatory legal framework. And I think we'll also see more sophisticated products being offered by some of these DeFi apps as well, dApps as well, digital applications. That's in terms of, you know, things like perpetual futures, which we, you know, we already see on the likes of GMX, which is another one of our holdings, which has been very, very successful for DGens wanting to bet on the outcome of major movements. But we're now also starting to see more yield-based products coming through, protocols that are sort of separating the capital growth from the yield component. We're starting to see a focus on some sort of almost an insurance kind of contract where you can hedge your liabilities within DeFi. Quite a raft of sort of more sophisticated products coming through. So that, I think that's been driven mainly by supply. I don't know that demand is there yet, but I know that it will come because people will realize that they can become a lot more sophisticated in how they're dealing with DeFi. They're just not rehypothecating ETH on Curve and Aave to just, you know, for degen returns. There's actually much more sophisticated strategies in there, which have come from TradFi, but I think work incredibly well in the digital asset space. So that was the reason that we liked Injective. You know, basically a gasless, almost instant chain. They developed on ETH, but transitioned across to Cosmos. I think the Cosmos ecosystem is a really interesting one. Effectively a layer zero where you can basically bring across your entire blockchain as a layer one and Cosmos will bootstrap that for you. So I think that was an interesting move. That makes it very attractive for builders to build. There is a very strong builder background within Injective to help new dApps come on board. You're already seeing the likes of Helix on there, which is a powerful DEX for spot and derivatives trading, MitoFi, DojoSwap. I think there were a couple of ones that came out at ETH Denver, things like Finance Hydro, which is very taking the lead in the liquid staking space on Injective. Griffin Fi, which is looking at new features like an NUSD, which will be an Injective native stablecoin, as well as restaking. So this whole DeFi opportunity we think is expanding rapidly. We do basically Injective as a DeFi specific blockchain. It enables people to build on their chain very quickly, very efficiently. It is cross-chain compatible, so it is compatible with ETH. It's in terms of the ETH virtual machine, the EVM, there is a lot of cross-compatibility there. And we think as that DeFi market continues to grow and mature, that's extremely well placed. One of the other areas that we're looking at is also real-world assets. We think that's another opportunity where TradFi comes into DeFi. That's been sort of done quite slowly at the moment in terms of US Treasury securities. But we know that the Aave is a bit of Maker is a bit of a leader in that regard in terms of real world assets. But also some of the smaller plays like Ondo Finance are really sort of getting quite involved in that, using a lot of the big ETFs, the Treasury security ETFs as their background for those digital assets. So that's another interesting component to the whole story. Yeah, very much so.
And so one Greg, thing on that too. Go ahead, Tarek.
No, go on.
Yeah, maybe again we could speak for hours, and we'll have to at some point.
Yeah.
But next time when we speak, Greg, love to touch base on this liquidity aggregation challenge as the various specialized layer ones come. It is a value transfer system. Did speak to Injective and Mirza, actually met Mirza in person at the Denver. We had an amazing exchange. They had an amazing presence across the event altogether. And we chatted about what's the vision, where they want to go with it. And they do compete with Ethereum directly now because they do want to be able to. But of course, Ethereum is the world's envy when it comes to DeFi, only because of the entire value. It's close to about half a trillion dollars that's trapped in, you know, in the Ethereum ecosystem, and the innovation they've gone is far, far bigger. So it's all about liquidity in markets and participants. So we should then at certainly some point discuss these various ecosystems emerging, and will the aggregation happen at the layer two protocol level, or will it actually happen at the application level where many various applications are trying to amalgamate the liquidity, which is also trying to improve the usability of these protocols. So, but that's, again, it's a whole different can of worms. and a rabbit hole, if I can use that term. But we should certainly discuss that, because that's, I think, is very, very interesting topic to dive into.
I certainly agree, and it's a bit of a Pandora's box. But you're right, whether it sits on the L1, whether it sits on the L2, whether it sits in the roll apps, the Dimension is looking at doing, there's so many different ways that it could play out. And which, you know, I think the interesting thing, though, is the big thing that I'm seeing now from 4 years ago is the ability to move cross-chain is a lot easier than it was 4 years ago. So it's almost seamless now in terms of bridging or using dApps that allow me to bring my Solana into the Ethereum ecosystem, or whatever the case may be, to participate within that DeFi opportunity. Or if I'm restaking on the Eigen layer, I can bring my ETH from almost anywhere. So I think that's really sort of will also help drive that adoption by normies, because you almost don't need to be aware of the wallet that you're using. The wallet's almost secondary. It's almost in the background now. Whilst for most of us, it's, you know, Web3 is all about your wallet, right? Maybe Web 3.5 is how you get people onto crypto without knowing that they're using a wallet. And that's to me, that's the massive opportunity.
Sure. All right. Well, look, we have to wrap. This has gone very quickly. So for the listeners, we are going to bring together Greg Nitton and also Mark Whitten, where possible, every second Tuesday of the month now, to provide in-depth review of what we think is happening technology-wise and market-wise relating to this market and how that's playing out. I think in the terms of Nitton and Greg, we'll be opening the Pandora's box, looking for rabbits and worms. but the fact of the matter is that this, I wish I could invite the world into our Radiance Investment Committee sometimes, because they're absolutely fascinating. The analysis that we have to go through to determine the investment strategy for Radiance is extremely interesting. And I want to share a little bit of that the second week of each month as we move forward. So for now, thanks very much, gentlemen. Great to have you on board, Greg. Always good to see you, Nitton. And we'll catch up very soon.
That's good. Thanks, Greg. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Alice. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed our weekly conversation. If you have any questions, comments, or suggested topics, please contact Nitton Gower or myself on the emails displayed here or via our LinkedIn profiles. Feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. Stay well, inquisitive, and engaged. See you next week.